Hello and welcome to Prime Lenses. I'm Ian. Each week, I speak with a guest about three lenses that have meant something to them on their photographic journey. Well, except when we don't. And this week, whilst we do touch on some lenses, my guest Alex Taylor and I don't go into a huge amount of detail on those. What we do talk about is the book that he and his friends have put together about the photography of a fantastic English photographer called Alice Longstaff. She was based in Hebden Bridge in the north of England, and as you'll hear from the conversation, he, quite by accident, found a treasure trove of photos. The book, The End of the Roll, is a collection of images that Alice would have shot, we think, at the end of a roll of film to finish it off before going and getting it developed, because she was a working photographer her entire life. Alex has done a fantastic job of uncovering these images, restoring them and sharing them with the world. I think you're really going to enjoy this conversation, and hopefully you'll come away from it with a real appreciation for Alice's images as well. Here's Alex Taylor.
Ken Gorms, I know it a little bit. I've done some work. I used to put ATM machines in my electrical world.
Oh yeah.
Probably did about 1,500 of them.
Wow.
Not that it's all to do with photography, but
no.
the good thing about it was that I used to be able to take my camera wherever. So I did an ATM just above Aberdeen in a Home Bargains, and you opened the back door and the North Sea was there. But consequently, I could take my camera with me.
Yeah.
Stopped in a Premier Inn and ended up photographing the golf course. Not the golf course, sorry, the sand dunes below Donald Trump's golf course, which has got some really interesting Second World War type things on it. You know you know the pillboxes and that kind of thing.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. So I mean, I don't do that now. I mean, I stopped doing that just before lockdown, but.
Mm.
I used to go all over the country, so I was a paid electrician to go and put ATM machines in all over the country and dog washing machines and washing machines in Belfast and places like that. And I get to photograph it at night, because what's one to do when, you know, it's better than sitting in a pub getting drunk, quite honestly.
Yeah, yeah. No, I completely agree.
One or two of my friends are sort of say to me, you're quite unusual in the way that you're a tradesman, but also you're a photographer, which I am. So I get to mix both work and pleasure quite often on the same trip. So it's quite unusual, which is how I ended up with Alice Longstaff, actually. That's how that came about.
So yeah, talk me through that then, so we can jump right in.
So I live in Sobey Bridge, and Alice Longstaff and Pennine Heritage are in Hebden Bridge, which is sort of 5-6 miles down the valley. And I think it was 9 years ago, maybe 10 years ago, the Birchcliffe Centre was having a grant, which is cutting edge at the time and still is, was having a ground source heat pump put in, two huge machines. So a ground source heat pump is where you pump water down into the ground and it comes back warmer and yada, yada. And I went to do some electrical work on it. And having an interest in photography, I realized I sort of got introduced to a gentleman called Frank Woolrich, who was in the video called End of the Roll. And Frank, being Frank, who's sadly no longer with us, Frank was like, "Oh, you need to come have a look at our archives." "What do you mean archives?" Come with me. So I went and had a look, and after I picked my jaw up off the floor, it was the rest was history, really. I hastened to add that I finished the electrical job first.
Yes. You're a professional.
A professional, yeah. Yeah, ironically, we've just had two new heat pumps fitted this last few weeks, so time's repeating itself, because I've just done some electrical work on that as well. But I ended up kind of getting into the archives, and then sort of talked about photography. And at the time, I was still doing only film photography. Which obviously is what Alice did, and most of our archive collection is, well, it's even pre-film photography. It's glass plates, a lot of it.
Wow.
You know, I think we've got about 20,000 glass plates, something like that. So I ended up volunteering, and then one thing led to another. Then I became a trustee, which I still am, obviously. And then we then the Alice Longstaff collection. Well, there already is a collection, but this new collection, the End of the Row collection, sort of came about. It was sort of refound. Now that to put some context onto that, within the Birchcliffe Centre, it's an old chapel. It's an old Baptist chapel. It hasn't been used for 50 odd years, and there's plenty of kind of little rooms in it that you would expect in a building that. I mean, it's a big building. And downstairs we have a storeroom under a staircase, under stairs cupboard, if you will. No fuse board in it, but photographs in it. So there's probably about 3,000 or 4,000 glass plates in it that are of sort of 100 years ago, and they're basically passport photos. So you know, you would go. So even now, you would go down to your local photography shop or Boots or whatever, sit in the machine, get your 4 pictures, and send them off at these days electronically. Back then, you had to go and have a glass plate made for a passport and or for ID and or for whatever else. So we've got thousands of these glass plates that we don't know who they are, and you know, we've probably got a negative of the same person, because it may be that the glass plate was turned into a negative for printing purposes, whatever it might be. You know, and don't forget, we're talking 100 years ago, so it's completely different to today. Everything had to be duplicated and that kind of thing. So within this room, there were some boxes, inevitably. And within these boxes were these little sort of brown envelopes, about the size of a bag of flour. And they just said Hebden Bridge. In fact, I've got one here as reference. I thought, while I'm talking about it.
Oh, amazing. One.
So I've got one here, and it's about the size of a bag of sugar. It says on it, Alice Longstaff, Hebden Bridge, 1952. And within that, you have, and I've got a box here, a plastic box here, and it must have probably, I don't know, 200 or 300 negatives in it.
Wow.
At the moment, I don't know what's on them, because I haven't looked at them yet. So, but these brown paper bags, you probably hear it rustling, these brown paper bags, yeah, they were tied up in string with Alice's writing on them. Never been opened for 70 years.
Wow.
Never been. And everybody thought, and quite rightly, oh, Alice never threw it away, which she didn't. And included all the bad photographs, as in, you know, the shot that was out of focus, or a shot where somebody walked in front of it. So we thought, oh, there'd be nothing. There'd be no on them. There'd be no. And then somebody thought, well, yeah, wait, well, how do we know? How do we know? So we opened, somebody opened a packet, and within these packets, there's these, I've got one in my hands now. It's like a folder. It says cello on it, S-E-L-O. And it's an Ilford packet, and it's got Alice Longstaff, Hebden Bridge written on it. And within these packets, there's individual negatives, because she must have processed them and then cut them all up into individual negatives.
Yeah.
They're all 6x6, taken on the Rolleiflex. And, you know, I mean, I'm picking one out now, and I've never seen this one before, and probably the last person to see this was Alice Longstaff.
Yeah.
And it's a picture of a cat in a window. So, do you know, but the next one might be, who knows? So, as it turns out, one of the first images that came out was the front of the book, Mop Bucket Woman, as we call her, because I don't know her name. It was taken in colour. I'll get back to that in a minute, but that's Mop Bucket Woman on the front cover of the book, End of the Row book. And that was one of the first images that sort of came to light, if you will. And then it was just like a couple more followed after that, black and white ones. And before you know it, you know, 10 good ones turned into 100 good ones, turned into where we are now. So, I mean, to sort of contextualise that, I'm guessing we originally called them the Lost Negatives, because that was just a working title, but it became End of the Roll, and I allude to why I think it's called the End of the Roll in the video that I sent you. So for the listener, I guess it you know, a Rolleiflex camera uses 120 roll film, 6x6 or 2¼ square in old money, You get 12 on a roll. And I would have thought Alice being the tight, sorry, Alice being the frugal, Alice being the frugal, short arms and long pockets person that she was, because she was from Hebden Bridge, let's face it. She probably went to a wedding, took the pictures at the wedding, took, I don't know, probably a couple of rolls with, on Ilford film. Again, I'll come back to that. And all I can think is, and the more, I mean, I've spent more time with these negatives than probably Alice did, to be fair, because she would have processed them, stuck in an envelope, they're no good, move on to the next job.
Yeah.
So the more I look through them, you think these are end at row. These are not the ones that were sold. These were not. And when you look through the book, you can see that the personal photographs.
Yeah.
So the picture with the Morris Minor, for example, that was taken on a day off.
Right.
Now, it's more than likely that was taken on a Tuesday. Why was it taken on a Tuesday? Because that was their day off.
Right.
If you see what I mean.
Yeah, yeah.
And the other thing as well, she was a working photographer, so her income was from photos, mainly weddings, 99% weddings. And again, when you look through the book and the negatives, they're not weddings.
No.
They're not weddings. Some of them are just not weddings at all. She had the odd paid job, like the hairdressers. I think that's in the book, actually. The hairdresser one, is that in the book?
Love that picture.
Yeah, and again, that's original colour.
Yeah.
So, and that would have been a paid job because colour film in the 1950s and 60s, well, certainly in the 60s, was monstrously expensive. You know, I'm sure there would have been a big premium on it.
Yeah.
A question I commonly get asked, particularly about mop bucket woman. Sorry, I can't think of a better name for her. You know, I mean, she's obviously, I mean, I'm looking at the book now as I speak to you. And,
yeah, same.
And she's, you know, I mean, my grandma had a smock that colour.
Yeah.
You know, it's just Yorkshire, isn't it?
She's very pleased with whatever she's finished cleaning.
Yes.
Or like, you know, like she's got hands on hips and it's the satisfaction of a job well done on her face.
Yeah. I mean, there's a bit of the Nora Batty's going on there.
Yes.
do you know what I mean?
It's
very, you know. But a question I often get asked, because we use this picture quite a lot, and the picture on the back cover, Spivman, Private Walker, Spivman. You know, what's he doing on the back cover?
Yeah, he looks sus. He looks like he's been caught,
Is that a rent book? Is he taking orders for dodgy cigarettes? Who knows?
Yeah.
Who knows? All I can tell you about that picture is it was taken in 1957. That's all I know about it.
Right. Yeah.
And that's why we originally called them the Lost Negatives, because we didn't know anything about them.
Yeah.
So we still don't. So the colour image on the front, there's two or three inside. There's one of Alice inside with a dog, Holly.
Yeah.
She also had that type of dog. And they're always called Holly.
Oh.
Well, it's easy to remember, isn't it?
Yeah, true.
So, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So they were taken in colour, and it was taken on Kodak safety film. One of the things that drew me to Alice's photography is how bloody good it is, but two, how difficult it was.
Hmm.
Because you've got to remember, particularly the colour pictures, it were ISO 12.
12?
Yes.
Wow.
Or 25 at the very, very most. And the black and white was probably 50.
Yeah.
Or maybe 64. You know, Ektachrome 64, we all remember that.
Some of
us do anyway. But yeah, the picture on the front, that front cover, was probably taken at ISO maybe 50, maybe 25, something like that. And
gosh,
you think,
yeah,
that takes some doing.
I've shot 50 Cinestill and it was hard.
It's hard, yeah. Yeah, and of course, you know, back in 1950s when everything was black and white and dark, it was even harder.
Yes.
You know, because this were a mill, you know, Hebden Bridge still is a mill town, but it was a mill town, so I dare say the skies weren't as bright as what they are now.
Yeah.
So, and when I look through the book, which I'm looking at because I've got a couple of the book here, you know, some of the, I mean, you can see the ones that are taken inside with a flash.
I was going to comment on that. Yeah, her use of flash is amazing because it's so natural. You know it. I mean, you look at it and you can tell. You can tell they've shot it, that she's shot it with a flash, and you can tell that you would have had to have done in the setting.
Yes. Like
the one that stood out to me was the one in front of the fireplace, but also of the little boy, I think it is, but also the one in the shop. You know, the one in the shop's brilliant, of the guy who obviously runs the place, the electrical shop, and his son. Her use, it was one of the notes I made, was that her use of flash is just so natural. You wouldn't...
It is.
It's really, really well lit. It's an almost like a modern... Well, it actually,
it is.
Modern photography tends not to hide the flash in the same way.
The last couple
of years, we've all gone down a sort of American Apparel route again, where harsh flash is cool again.
Yes, it's become fashionable again, hasn't it, in that respect? Yeah. I mean, some of these shots, I mean, if you looking through the book now, so you've got to talk about the image on page 31. Dear listener,
you'll just have to pick up the book. It's great.
You have to buy a book. I'm unashamedly plugging it.
Yeah.
So if you look at image on 31, page 31, the little boy in front of the fireplace, you know, and by the way, that's Queen Elizabeth on that tin.
Right. Not the second.
Yes. Second. Yeah. Sorry.
Second. All right.
QE2. Okay. Yeah.
QE2. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's QE2, is that? So that's an image that we know. I don't know anything about that image. I could probably tell you what year it was taken if I looked hard enough, but that's about all I know about that image. But that you spot the shadow, basically. That looks like it's done in daylight.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's not.
Amazing. And the lenses, don't forget as well, that she's using the fastest. Yeah. What's the speed of lens on a Rolleiflex?
As it turns out, Ian, I just so happened to have her camera in my hand.
Oh, wow. Cool.
Yeah. Yeah. And some exciting news about this camera as well, which I'm going to tell you about in a bit. But so this camera, the Rolleiflex 35F, which I can't get the cover off, just a minute. So it's an F35.
Yeah.
That's your fastest aperture. Now, when you're shooting on ISO 50 film, that means nothing. Mm. You know, your Sony 16 rule does not count.
No.
Gosh. It's not like your Sony 8th roll. I'm looking at Alice's camera now. Granted, my hands, I've used this camera a number of times, and I will be using it again this year. It's still usable. It's still in good nick. Well, it's well used, but it's in good nick. I've had the privilege of using it a few times. I've put rolls of HP5 through it, for those who'd like to know. You know, it's in really good nick. In fact, it's going to get sent off for a service in the next few weeks, actually. It needs, because shutter's running a little bit slow. But all I can think of, getting back to the camera and getting back to the f-stop, as it were, I would have thought, and I've used a TLR camera like this for the last 30 years on and off, I would have thought that she would have used it on f8, which gives you a nice... It's like the sweet spot, really. It gives you that nice bit of bokeh, as we call it these days. And then it's nice, sharp and contrast, you know. And it's worth mentioning that the pictures in the book, I've not sharpened them. They've been naturally sharpened because they've been scanned, but they've had most of the pictures in the book are 90% what's on the negative.
Oh, that's amazing.
I've done so we're at Pennine Heritage, we're an archive. Mm. So you've got to preserve what's there.
Yes.
Now, I want the images to look the best they can because they're amazing. However, I also want to keep them true. You know, what I don't want to do is, the best analogy I can give is what Giles Martin is doing to the Beatles catalogue. You know,
right.
It's dissecting it all and putting it all back together, which is great. Mm. You know, with Pro Tools and all that. But I want to keep it as honest as I can. You know, and so most of the image, particularly color images, keeping that color tone.
Yeah.
You know, I could have quite easily, you know, pressed all the levels in Photoshop, and it have turned it into a modern, accurate color photo. But that's not the point of these.
No.
At all. They are what they are, you know. So yeah, you know, the book took I think I put about 80 hours into the book, restoration and sorting it out. The book came. So to give you a history, to give you a history, because this collection came to light out of the cellar room in the Birchcliffe Centre. I think it was the 6 months coming up to lockdown, which is 2020, is that right? Yeah, seems like, yeah, 5 years ago. Who
It's
would have thought?
5 years this
It's
year, which is
5 years,
insane.
mate. 5 years, yeah. Yeah. The life before lockdown. Seems like a distant memory. So they came to light in, what would it be, about 2019, give or take, that kind of year. And then I'd sort of planned the first exhibition. We had a taster exhibition, which was basically 12 images that were kind of plucked out, get them out there, see what interest there is, see what's what. You know, meanwhile, in the background, the images were being gone through. So there's about 4,000 negatives, roughly, in this collection. And let's say, you know, must emphasize that the last person to see most, if not all, of these negatives before we opened them in 2019 was Alice. Back in that, so the range of these negatives, by the way, is 1952 to about 1972. The little boy in the little boy in the wheelchair in front of the bus, is the probably the most modern image that we have in this particular collection, and that's not long before. It probably one of the last photo jobs that Alice did. She retired sort of mid 70s, and then she passed in 92 at age of 85. So she kept the shop right until the last few years of her life. Yes, she did. There's an interesting story about the shop as well, which I'll come back to. So we'd found these images. And then the first exhibition of the images was going to be Easter of lockdown, which was April, whatever it might have been. And then obviously the whole world went on pause for 2.5 years. So really, we just it sat in hibernation. So really, even though it's 5 years old, the project, in reality, it's only three or two and a half because it had a gap. So we did. So when lockdown went, we and in that within lockdown, I'd kind of sort of built the exhibition, as it were, scanned a lot of them and worked out what we had. And then lockdown went, we had the film made, the End of the Road film that I sent you a link to. Again, if we'll have to, dear listener, you'll have to watch it, because
It's really
you
good.
know, somebody that looks strange like me sat in it and sounds like me sat in it. A lot of people think, you know, that film, Ian, a lot of people think that I narrate it, and it's not. It is Ian McMillan, it's not me. And looking back, I could have done a who is this? This is the, you know, I could have done it. But anyway,
Next one.
wouldn't have had the gravitas of it. So we had that film made, and then we had the first exhibition, which went quite well. In fact, went very well. I mean, one thing with Alice in Hebden Bridges, she's a local celebrity. You know, the amount of we have, I call them not. We have regulars. I'm trying to think of a nice way of putting it. We have regulars. Every exhibition we put on, oh, John's come again this year. Look, oh, so and so's come again this year. But every year I put new images out, so I kind of, you know, feeds itself in that respect. So we did first exhibition, went really well, and then we did the second exhibition, which is 2023. Again, went really, really well. And then we did last year's exhibition. And last year, we finally decided that I could do the book. And I've been, you know, I want to do the book. Understandably, now you're seeing the book. I've been wanting to do the book for a number of years. But you know, with these things, you can't run before you can walk. You know, I want to get enough collection out there. So when this book came out in September, I'd released, for want of a better term, round about 130 new images. I've got another 200 or 300 to come, you know, building an exhibition is quite hard, because it's which ones do you leave out? But then you think, well, it don't matter, I'll just do it next year. So you know, sometimes I do them a little bit to a theme,
Yeah.
You know, so the exhibition before last, our then heritage manager Francesca said, "Well, you know, can we have a? I put 40 images out, so can we have, I don't know, say eight of children portraits and eight of wedding portraits, and then eight pets and eight, you know, that kind of thing." So it puts a little bit of a theme in there.
Mm.
But last year it was more a case of, I put some in that I wanted to put in a couple of years before. And then I also put a couple of fresh ones in. So, for example, in the book, the Cornwall one with the old couple with the suitcase. I mean, that is
it's a tremendous photograph.
Jaw-dropping.
It's a lovely street photo of, listeners to the show will know that sometimes I'm a bit critical of street photography that's just the back of a lot of people's heads. But this is not that. This is a scene in Cornwall with an older couple stood, framed beautifully, and just looking
out. It's Hollywood.
Out. Yeah, it's like really Hollywood. Good. It's really, really good. That was one of the ones
I bit. Announced. There's almost a bit of a Hitchcock look to it. There's a bit of a, I don't know if you would agree, but there's a bit of a Hitchcock look to it. There's a bit of a, it's 19, I think it's 1957, that one.
Yeah.
And I've been saving that one. As
it's
it
a
were.
Great shot. It's really, it's really good.
And that was that when I put the book together, I think there's 60 images in the book. Mm. I should know really, but I think it's 60 images I think I put in the book. And I started off with 8 images for the book, and then you get it down to 75, then you get it down to 70. And then we went to meet the book, me and Andrew, who's done all the edited the book. He's our heritage manager, is Andrew. He did the interview with The Guardian. So he's sort of the glue that helped me put it together, really. I did the photography side, but he did the, I'm not very good at the text and all that kind of thing. Although I did do the essay about the technical side of it, because, you know.
I did like that. More photo books, I think, should include like the detail of how you scanned it. And the rationale behind setting it up and things like that. I found that really interesting as well. I sort of came to the book expecting a good story and expecting great images, because, you know, I'd read around and seen Ted Forbes talking about it as well. But I hadn't...
Bless him. Bless
I hadn't...
Him.
Yeah, yeah. Potential future guest of the show. We're working out of time. No, it should be a good one. What I hadn't really expected was that technical stuff, because like you're talking about there, 80 hours of going through images and touching up and things like that. And actually, it's funny, we go full circle in a way, because the first guest I had on the show was my mate Danny. He did a photo book of found slide film that he picked up at in the US. I think it was like an estate sale or something. Sales. Yeah, he was picking it. And he went through about 6 months a year of picking up film and like just old photos. And then he just picked out the best ones. And his book is, I think it's called Found Film. And he called it Found Film Volume 1. And he has reassured me that there will never be a Volume 2, because it was so much work to edit all the images. And so what he used to do was he used to do it on his iPad. So he would sit with the TV on in the background or something of an evening and touch up one or two. But he didn't have the restraint that you have of like, no, I'm going to get myself down to just 60 images and make sure they're right and proper. I think his book's got like 100 or so images in it. It's quite a lot. So he kind of, I think he ruined it for himself, you know? He bit off a bit more than he could chew.
Yeah, I mean, it's quite easy to get sort of tunnel vision with it, really, because am I totally satisfied with some of the edits in that book?
Mm.
No, I could have done a lot more to them, but end of the day, they're not my photos. I'm just the keeper of them for now.
Yeah,
you know, or Pennine Heritages, via me, or me via Pennine Heritage, but. You know, I want them to look great, but I've had the view, and I'll always have the view that Alistair Longstaff's photos, this particular section of it, I mean, standard wedding photos, they're great.
Yeah.
But the standard wedding photos, they're not these. You know, they, like I say about the street photography, this is at a different level.
Yeah.
Completely different level. This is you know, putting her feet up, having a glass of wine type stuff. You know, it's when she got home at night. Well, she didn't get home at night and drink. She used up her rolls of film and took some arguably some of the best pictures of this part of the world ever taken.
Yeah. I mean, do you think she had any idea that what she was... Because she didn't throw anything away, so she was keeping them.
That's a good question. She didn't throw anything away because photography was a business. I'm an electrician. I don't throw circuit breakers away because you never know when you're going to need it.
Yeah.
I know you can't compare that with a photo, but it's the same principle.
Yeah.
To it's sort of two stories in one, Ian, that recently, out of all the electricians in Hebden Bridge, Sober Bridge, Calderdale Valley area, Alice Longstaff's shop does not exist anymore. It hasn't existed for 30-odd years. Mm. However, she owned a shop, ground floor, first floor, and top floor.
Mm.
And that now, it's in a row of shops, if you will. So the ground floor is, I think it's a kitchen design shop, if I've got that right. And when we had the first exhibition, they kindly put an image of her shop, in fact, the one that appears in the film, that image in their window.
Oh, wow.
Because Hebden Bridge was like having a retro window type thing. So anyway, so we put a picture of Alice Longstaff's shop back in Alice Longstaff's shop, albeit 50 years apart.
Mm.
So in my electrical world, I have a solicitor who's a customer. I do all sorts of bits and pieces for him. And literally November last year, I got a phone call off him. And can you come down? We need to renew all his lights in his offices to LEDs because of energy costs. Yeah, fine. Do it week in, week out. Goes down, and I meets the customer there, Karen. And Karen knew Alice, and Karen knows that I'm the Alice guy, if you like.
Yeah.
And so we're walking around. So she went, "Oh, so you'll never believe this." She said, "So went upstairs in their office, went across two floors, and we ended up on the first floor above the old Alice shop." Well, of course, it would 50 years ago, 60 years ago, 70 years ago, it was Alice's office.
Wow.
So out of all the electricians in all the world in Calderdale,
that's brilliant.
Who gets to change the old fluorescent lighting? Only me. So, and again, that's amazing. Went up into the attic. Mm. The attic now is full of, I think it's full of deeds or whatever, solicitors, working solicitors. But then, When they took over the office in 1990, whatever it was, when it became the solicitors it is now, then there were still bits of Alice in there, her old documents and books and that.
Yeah.
Some of which got donated via Frank to Pennine Heritage, just in the same way that all the negatives and everything, and we own the copyright for Alice Longstaff. Hence, I can do the book. Hence, I can do whatever I need to do with it.
Yeah.
So it's quite ironic that so they allow me to take a couple of pictures on my phone. So I'm sure in a future exhibition or something, you know, let's say of all the electricians in all the world, sounds like Casablanca.
I was just going to say of all those gin joints.
All the electricians in all the world in Calderdale, not Casablanca. It had to be me. Yours truly changed the light fittings. I mean, who would have thought?
That's
it was great because it was just like, and we just got the book out, literally got the book out, and sort of the week after I'd gone down to actually do the job, and I took what's now my copy of End of the Roll. It's looking a bit battered actually, but what's my now copy of the End of the Roll. Me and Andrew got the first two out of the packet, obviously, because we did the book.
Good.
And I took it down. It was just like, it just felt so... It was like, it had to be me. It had to, I had to be me. I just thought, wow, that's great. You know, and I thought, I'm studying this shop now upstairs with Alice Longstaff's book that I've had the privilege of putting together. Oh, wait a minute, I'm in her shop. Unbelievable.
That's tremendous.
Unbelievable.
It's so good.
Know? Yeah. It's, you know, but that's me all over again. You know, things just kind of come along and work out that way. It's just I'm just incredibly lucky, really.
Well, I think if you're creative, I've talked about this recently, but like if you're open to things, and when you're a photographer and you've got an interest in photography, and you've obviously you kind of end up having an interest in the world in some way, whether it's people, yes. whether it's animals, whether it's shapes and lights and stuff, like all of that exists because of the people in the world. And you're always, yeah. I say this all the time on the podcast, but if you're holding a camera, you're signaling to the world, I'm doing something, but I'm interested in the world.
In you.
Because, yeah. Yeah, and potentially
yeah.
in you.
Yeah.
And I think it's not an accident that someone who goes on a trip and you know, when they're working, takes their camera with them anyway. Because I do the same thing. It was really funny when you were telling those stories at the beginning. I travel a lot for work as well. And I always make sure that wherever I am, because I might never go back. Like if I get to go, you know, like to Austin or to like New York, or like, I've done that a lot for work because, you know, I'm a working games. I might not get to go back anytime soon. So taking the camera, like you say, is the thing to do rather than just go and sit in the hotel restaurant and then watch TV or whatever. I can go outside and I can meet some people, and you end up having a chat about your camera, or they've usually, people have often got a relative who was also into photography, or they're into photography themselves, and then you get stories, and then, you know,
it's worth it, isn't it? It's a great way. Yeah. Did you know, you've been out on your travels, you've done your day's work and you know, you might have had your tea in the restaurant, etc. And particularly in summer, you think, oh, well, it's only 7:30. Well, sunset's in an hour and a half. So, yeah. And, well, sea's just down, you know, because I live in landlocked Selby Ridge. So, oh, the sea's just down the road. So you go down and you think, oh, I'm on right side of country for sunset, and etc. But the thing I always get, and I'm sure other listeners do as well, is that you take the picture and you're so engrossed in taking the picture, and you're faffing about with your grey grad, or you're faffing about, or whatever you're doing. And then you turn around and some bloke says, do you get a good one, mate?
Yeah.
That looks like a nice camera. You're thinking, ooh,
oh, no. Oh. Yeah, I've had that too. I put it quickly back in my bag. And I'm like, yeah, I'm fine, thanks.
On the odd occasion when I've taken a film camera, until I don't know, 12 months ago, I was shooting large format 5.4.
Wow.
You should try it. It's a discipline in photography that I believe everybody should have a go at. It's not easy.
No.
But the rewards are immense.
You'd have to have a van traveling around with that thing.
Ansel Adams. Yeah.
Yeah.
But, I just take half a dozen dart slides and be preloaded, you know, preload them at weekend, then take them with me, etc. But, the thing I always used to get, getting back to, have you got a good one, mate, was, I didn't know you could still buy film. Eh? What's that? You know, I had one guy say to him, is that a musical instrument with bellows on it? What do you call it?
Like an accordion. Yeah.
Is that an accordion? No, mate. It's got a lens on it. You know. So. That actually, speaking of large format photography, it's where Ellis started.
Oh, really?
So. Yeah. So. I'd like to give you a little bit of history of Ellis, because she's a fascinating character. Not only a great photographer. So she was born in 1907. And obviously in a northern town, Hebden Bridge, born in a cottage, and there was a photographer in the Alice Longstaff shop, but before it became Alice Longstaff shop, and Frank alludes to this in the video, it was the Westerman shop. Now we've still got Westerman's camera, which is a 16x12 plate camera. It weighs about half a ton. You need a, you know, but I've not worked out how to take a picture with it yet. Because it's got a few light leaks on it, but it's a work in progress, is that? Oh. But Alice's first job, when she was a young teenager, she literally wrote to Westerman's photography shop and said, I want to be a photographer. I want to be an apprentice. Now, 115 years ago, a girl doing that in a northern town in 2025 would be something, but... in 1940, you know, round about the, you know, sort of First World War sort of thing. It's just incredible. So she was taken on as apprentice, and down at the Birchcliff Centre, we have the letter. We have the letter that she sent, you know, got quite a lot of her artifacts. So there's a lot of history sort of tactile history. We've got a school report. We've even got her books where she's been paid for jobs. She's written paid in big blue biro through it. Paid, you know. So, but she was taken on by Westerman. And at the time, of course, he was using plate photography, silver plate photography, you know, silver nitrate on the plate, glass plate photography. And her first job, or one of her first jobs, before she moved up to using a camera, was touching pictures up. So you would have had your picture taken, and then you would have paid an extra cost to have your picture touched up into colour. And we have some, and I think on the film, again, dear viewer, listener, you have to watch the film. On the film, we show one of her, and that we have that, you know, that's in our display case at the Birchcliffe Centre, and it's about an A4 size. And when you look at it, you can see the pencil marks, coloured pencil marks, where she's coloured the dressing or she's covered in the hair or whatever it might be. So that's what, so the meticulous art, and I mean art of doing that, is how she started off in a visual world of work, if you like. And I think when you look at that and you look at some of the other ones that she touched up, and we have a lot of examples of that down at the Birchcliffe Centre, you can see where the photography came from. You can see the composition skill. You can see the setting up skill. You can see she tries to tell a story within in a picture. Whereas when she were, in my view, when she were colouring in a picture back in the, you know, before she started taking photos, she was, in my view, she was colouring in to try and, let's say it was a christening. So she might have been, so there might have been something significant about, say, the tie that the guy was wearing in the picture, or the you know, I don't know, the cardigan that the child who was being baptized, that might have been a specific colour for that reason. And the family would have paid to have that coloured in to that colour. That makes sense. It's almost like today we have adult colouring books, don't we?
Yeah.
Do you see what I mean?
And so that's
how she started, and then she'll have started as a photographer's assistant. I think we have, not in this collection, because I say this is from 1952, but certainly from sort of 1920s, 30s, and 40s, which we have, you know, we have images from then.
Yeah.
Plenty of them taken by Alice, I hasten to add. She would have used different cameras. She would have used plate cameras. And in fact, within this collection, although not in the book, there is several images of the plate cameras that they're using at the time. And they're enormous.
Yeah.
Absolutely enormous. Yeah, it's like the old-fashioned TV where you had the screen about 4 foot behind it. You know, it's just enormous. And that's how she started.
That makes sense for her lighting, though, in a way.
Because, yes, it does, yeah.
Because she'd have started work in a studio, I'm guessing, and then in a studio setting where you've got lights and things, no wonder she can light a scene, because she spent all that time making the images and then living with them afterwards and really looking at them and maybe colorizing some of them and things like that.
Yeah.
So she's had a long, you know, like, I suppose it's easy to look at the images as someone like me coming into it fresh and go, well, these are kind of the classic street photo images of the time, sort of like Leica are just celebrating their 100th anniversary of like the first 35mm.
Yeah.
So that kind of, we think of cameras, they're bigger back then, but it's the revolution of the small camera that suddenly you can take places.
Yeah.
But she's learned her craft way before then, when it was much, much harder and much, much slower.
Yeah, right back at the, almost the initiation of photography, really.
She's been doing it nearly 25 years by the time she's taken some of these.
Oh, yeah, and the rest, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
wow.
Yeah. It's incredible. I mean, 70 years she did photos. Ironically, you know, you were saying about, why she kept everything. I was saying she kept everything. The lady down at the solicitors where I did the lights, she was telling me that, right towards the end of her life, sort of 1988, 89, when the shop was starting to wrap up and everything,
yeah.
The local civic trust hall or whatever, She was a member of it. She was a member of the local round table, you might say, and as you'd expect, because she was a local celebrity in that respect. So they wanted to give her a, not a gold watch, but they wanted to, a presentation and this and X, Y, and Z. And whoever was telling me said, because she was still on the committee at the time, she vetoed it and she had it cancelled, so she didn't get anything.
Oh.
She wasn't interested. She wasn't interested at all. She had no. And a few people have said to me that knew her. So I never met her, but the few people have said to me that met her, so she'd have liked what you're doing with it, but she wouldn't have liked the kudos of being a good photographer, because she saw it as a bread and butter. She saw it as a, it paid the mortgage, it paid the rent, it paid the whatever. Yeah. Which probably made her a better photographer, to be fair, because she wasn't, she, there's no pressure there. There's no pressure there to keep up, you know, it, for example, I don't know, whichever world leading and Leibovitz, I suppose, you know, yeah. You know, can you imagine the pressure that she had photographing the late Queen?
Yeah.
And getting right.
Yeah.
Alice didn't have, I'm not saying Alice is like, what I'm saying is Alice never had that kind of issue, because she didn't want it. She did. She turned her back on it. She just, I take pictures. That's that.
Yeah.
But I'm the same. I'm the same. And I think that's why, you know, if I take a picture of people like it, fine. If they don't, fine. You know, I think Alice was like that as well.
Yeah.
You know, people have said to me that she was very matter of fact, very, very matter of fact. And you knew where you stood with her, and you knew. And I kind of like that. And I think as well that, when you're photographing weddings, which I've done a few of, and you know, they're not easy things to do. You can imagine an Alice sort of saying, well, you know, I need to get this picture of you. Well, you're going to stand there and I'll do it. And, you know, but look at the results, you know, look at the results, you know, and speaking about Alice's studio, if you look at page 11 in your book, dear listener, when you bought one, there is Christine and Pepe the dog.
Ah, yes. I liked that one. I thought it was really good.
That's in Alice's studio.
Right.
And that's a series of three pictures that we've got. In fact, on that one, I've left the clip mark on the right-hand side. I could have removed that quite. If you look at it on the right-hand side, the clip mark for where it was hung to dry.
Yeah.
The white mark. Yeah, I've left that on that one.
So
but that's a series of three pictures. This lady, that's circa 1954, this lady died about 20 years ago. Not all the people in the book have died. We know of one or two that are still alive. In fact, at the last exhibition, and a picture that didn't make it into the book, but it will do next year, or next book, he actually came and stood in front of his picture, calling James.
Yeah.
Got his name written somewhere. He came and stood in front of a picture of him taken in 1954, him and his dog. He couldn't remember the name of the dog. So I took a picture of him stood next to himself with 76 years difference in it.
Yeah, wow. That's
brilliant. Which is just, it's just mind-blowing, really.
You know?
And there's a few in the book that are still alive. So Rick, there's one I met her son. Page 55, the girl on the left, Ruth Calvert, the caller. Again, sorry, dear listener, but you need to buy a book.
The pictures of bridesmaids, they look like two bridesmaids dressed up.
Two bridesmaids,
and it's fair to say they look as happy as bridesmaids who've been told to wear something can look. They don't look thrilled.
If you went to their party and they said that you're not on the list, you wouldn't argue with them.
No, you would not.
Do you know what I mean?
There's shining energy. Really
stern does not cover it. So anyway, the girl on the left, as you look at the picture, Ruth Calvert, I think it is. I met her son. He came to the second exhibition. That's my mum. That's my mum. That.
Blimey.
And that's at such and such a wedding. I give him a. I think I give him a. You know, like a 75 print of it or something for his mum.
Oh, lovely.
And I meant to go and see his mum, and I kept up thinking that may not happen now, but
yeah.
It's the first time it's ever happened that we've had actually somebody turn up and say, "That's me," because somebody said, you know, we have an exhibition in our hall, which is an ex-Baptist chapel, so it's huge. Mm. So I can fit 350 people in this hall. So we have like a dance floor in the middle of it. So we have these big sort of doors with all the images hanging on them. And I'll never forget it was, I think it was Saturday afternoon, and I got a tap on the shoulder and said, Alex, you need to come up. This guy over here, he's seeing. I think, oh, God, what's happened? It comes up. He went, now then, young man, this picture here. I said, do you know what? He said, yeah, it's me and me dog and cat. All right. Can I take your picture? Yeah, of course you can. That's 76 man. Years ago. And this lad's this guy now is 82, 83 year old. Blimey. And you look at the picture of them both. I must send it to you. Look at the picture of both. You think, God, yeah, that's him.
That's wonderful.
So as it turned out, that same exhibition weekend last year, we had the book launch at that exhibition. So we had a lot more people turn up than what we normally do. Mm. And we also get a few hundred through the door, but last year we were really busy.
Yeah.
And one of Alice's ex-neighbours, a guy called Peter Haig, who's known to most of our trustees, I knew of him. He used to live next door to Alice back in the 80s and early 90s.
Oh, wow.
So he kind of helped Alice downsize when she was, you know, heading towards the inevitable. And it turns out that he said, oh, Alex, I'm just clearing out my galleries because me and my wife are moving, blah, 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 whatever it was. I can't remember. So he said, I've noticed in one or two pictures that you've got in Alice's studio, you've got the old wooden chair that everybody sat on. I said, oh, yeah. He said, I've got it. Do you want it? I'm like, what? He said, yeah. I said, it's sat in my garage. Do you want it? I said, yeah, I'll have it. Yeah, we'll have it. So 2 weeks later, this bloody horrible chair. It ain't horrible, actually. It's Alice's chair, so I've got to like it. But it looks like a vicar's chair. And all I can say is that people in 1950s must have been bloody hobbits, because I can barely sit in. I'm 6'1", I'm quite a big guy. Right. I can barely sit down on it. So they all must have been dwarfs then. So he turns up with this chair, and I thought, and this is, I'm alluding to the future now. I thought, what can I do here? Because I'm thinking, you know, we've got the book out, we've got the Guardian thing out, I'm doing the interview with you, we've got other things going on, and, you know, it's finally getting the traction that I wanted it to get, you know, and et cetera, et cetera. I know what I'm going to do. So what I'm going to do is, and I know you don't know the Birchcliff Centre, but we have a mezzanine floor, which is like an upper level. It's like quite a big room. So what I'm going to do is, as I mentioned before, I'm going to send Alice's camera off for a service. I'm going to set up a studio using Alice's camera upstairs. So we're having a new exhibition 19th and 20th of July this year. It's going to be called, not End of the Roll, it's going to be called Start of the Roll.
Oh, great.
And the reason why it's going to be called Start of the Roll is because what I'm going to do is I'm going to say to Joe Public, right, particularly in Hebden Bridge, right, this particular weekend you can come and see us new 40 images that I'll be putting out like I normally do, and you can book a place and you can come and sit down on Alice's original portrait chair and get your picture taken under studio lights with Alice's camera.
That sounds fantastic.
Yeah, well, it's a square in the circle, isn't it? You know, I have put half a dozen rolls through this camera in Hebden Bridge. I've got a Yashica version of this as well. I've got a Yashica mat, and this Rolleiflex 3.5, which I'm looking at now. It's a Carl Zeiss lens on it, for those who want to know as well. It's the 4-element lens, which is the better lens than the 3-element lens. So it's a better lens. This camera's about 1952, 1953, by the way. You can date, I don't know if people know, you can actually date a Rolleiflex off its serial number if you look online. So I think it's 1952, this one. So definitely Alice's camera. There's no shadow of a doubt about that. So that's the plan. So you know, I want to try and so the event will be called Start of the Roll. So it will be an exhibition like we always do, and then you can have your picture taken with Alice's photo with Alice's camera. I'll be using HP5 for those who want to know. developed in Rodinal, which is virtually bomb-proof, but I don't know what chemicals Alice used back in the day. It was definitely Ilford Film and Kodak. So it would have been Kodak. Was it T-Max in the 60s? I think it was, wasn't it?
Might be. My film, I joke that I'm a tourist, but like my film knowledge is very slim.
Yeah, somebody, I'm sure somebody can correct me on that, but I think it says, for those who'd like to know, it says Kodak safety film on the black and white ones on Kodak. The Kodak colour film, which is on the front of the book, I guess that was Kodak. I think it was 25 that they used first. And then Ilford, we've actually got some boxes of film. They've not been shot, unfortunately. But we've actually got some boxes of film that were left over from Alice's day. We've got a Western Supermaster thing. Is it Western Meter? A Handel Meter?
Oh, wow.
We've got that as well. Got that as well. We've even got a air release.
Yes.
She did a selfie of herself. I think it was early 50s.
Mm.
Taking on this Rolleiflex, and in her hand, it's a bit like that Ponting picture taken in the Arctic. You know, you can see, it's a bit like that. If you look hard enough, you can see she's got this little air cable release thing, you know,
right.
It's like a siphon. Mm. So, I mean, you know, for such a straightforward Yorkshire girl that she was, the thought of, why did she take a selfie? Was it to test the shutter? Was it to test the shutter release? Who knows?
Guess so. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, also, it's a kind of proud tradition of, it's one of the, so I had someone on the show, I can't remember who it was talking about when you do a photography course or when you learn photography, one of the first assignments you get often is the self-portrait because you're often working, especially when you're learning something. She wasn't by this point. She was well through that. But when you're learning, you've got to learn the confidence to approach people. And so starting with a self-portrait means, well, you get comfortable with doing it to yourself first and then kind of work from there. But
Yeah, that's true, isn't that? Yeah. I mean, when we did the documentary, I did that in one take, you know, that documentary. And I've got to the stage now, I can't watch it because I've seen it so many times.
Right. Yeah.
You know, and it's just like, oh, you know, just, you know, grown. It's funny actually because that particular shirt I'm wearing that documentary, we show that documentary at the exhibition, you know. Mm. So for the 2 years after we made that documentary, I wore that shirt at the document at the exhibition.
Yeah.
And people are like, oh, he's great. Must be who he got the same shirt on. No, I'm just a tight Yorkshireman. I can't be bothered to buy another one. So, doing a selfie. Yeah, I mean that. You know, the selfie. The selfie that a lot of photographers do now is put your camera of choice on your shoulder and look at a mirror, don't you? And do it that way.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, a lot of people do that. There was an exhibition of that. I was in Sweden last year, in Stockholm.
Oh, wow.
And they had an exhibition on. There's a really amazing photography museum in Stockholm, right down in the center of the town. And they had an exhibition on there that was about selfies, effectively, and was talking about how it was one of the oldest forms of photo that people have kind of always taken pictures of themselves, often reflected in things like mirrors and stuff. I saw there was an exhibition of Paul McCartney's photos in London, and it ended early last year, and that was photos they'd found a bit like you finding Alice's stuff. Like Paul McCartney found a bunch of undeveloped films. And they're like 63 to 67 or something like that. It's basically when they blew up. So it's them going to the States. I've got a couple of the photos framed. There's one through the window of a car at some kids on the street. And there's a couple of like selfies of Macca and like in a mirror. And you know, no shade on the guy. He was a fairly average photographer in 1963, but by the end, he's developing a bit of a look and a bit of an eye. He's got a bit of an eye for it. And it's really funny because you're looking at all these pictures. I think they were taken with Pentax cameras. Pentax gifted them, you know, the Fab Four gifted them.
As you would imagine.
Here, we'll give these guys the best camera we make. And then it's seen being used by a Beatle. And it's just funny because there's all these photos that are like fairly fairly average, sort of like just nice photos of your friend taken at like 1.8 because you can.
But it's
John Lennon, or it's, you know, it's Ringo. It's just George really funny. Yeah. It's really odd.
Yeah, incredible. Yeah. I think you know, you say about photographers. I think there's a photographer in most of us. I really believe that, and I think. I think modern photography, you know, your cell phone or whatever, has made it, made people better at photography. That's probably what I want to say. I think they're more established. The trouble is, of course, that you can take a picture with an iPhone or whatever it might be, and that's fine. But to take a picture with a Rolleiflex is a different beast. It's a different discipline, really.
Yeah, I described it to my sister-in-law recently because she's interested in photography and was complaining. She got like a camera, but then her photos of the sunset she thought weren't as good as the photos taken with her friends got on their iPhone. And I was like, well, it's a different thing. You've got to learn how to drive it. You've got to learn how to develop it. It's not, you know, the phone is going to help you. And actually, Becca Versace, we had on recently, was like, just use the phone for the sunset. Like, just don't torment yourself. If you like what the phone makes, use the phone for that one. And then if you like what the camera does for other things, then use the camera for that. You know, you have to explore it a little bit, don't you? You have to play with it.
You do. I totally agree. And I think there's a case, I mean, it's quite an old-fashioned saying, but, you know, the best camera you have is the one that's with you. Well, if that happens to be your phone, then so be it. You know,
exactly.
A phone camera's so good these days. I mean, you can even get raw files out of them now, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, but, it's madness.
You know, I mean, who'd have thought that? You know, but you know, you get a phone now that can do all these. I mean, I've got this Google thing, and the camera on it's fantastic.
Yeah,
but you know, I can get a 12x10 print out of it, digital print out of it, no problem.
Yeah. It's funny. Have you ever seen the video? There's Edwin Land, the Polaroid founder. Made a film when they were building a factory. I think it's called The Walk. It's on YouTube. And during it, because he was the amazing showman. And so he wanted to tell this story that he had this vision for the factory that they were building and why they were making it. And so he comes, I mean, again, this is made, I think it's black and white, and it's made, probably made in the 50s. And he comes in a helicopter. And it's like, that's a
as
big
you do.
That, yeah, back then, like, that's a statement. You know, he's turning up because people saw them in Bond movies.
Say, is he James Bond or something?
Well, yeah exactly. And he comes down and there's a bit where he's in the factory and he's describing, as he walks towards the camera, he's describing a future where he, like, imagines that you take something the size of your wallet out of your pocket, and he uses his wallet as the prop, and he takes the wallet out of his inside pocket, opens it, takes the photo, closes it, and gets on with his day. And Ben, a friend of mine, Ben, who does a channel on YouTube called In an Instant, where he talks about Polaroid photography or instant photography mostly, but he's a big Polaroid head. And he has that clip of Land at the beginning because he's like,
wow.
You know.
Yeah, well, it's relevant, isn't it?
Yeah, it's so good. And it's just funny how that's where we are now. Like, if he could see that now, of just literally you take this device out of your pocket that you have with you everywhere.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
But I mean, it is amazing. But I mean, the other side of the coin to that is the resurgence of film. I mean, some of us, you know, obviously myself included, has never given up. Never gave up film. You know, I've shot film for 40 years now. But you know, I'm not. I don't do any darkroom. I must admit. And we did at one stage want to set up a new darkroom. There used to be a darkroom at the Birchcliffe Centre. Just to sort of say that the Birchcliffe Centre is a tenanted building. So we have tenants, and one of his tenants, that's what they did. And this is 10 years ago. They've since moved on. But we had a facility to reset up a dark room, but that's not going to happen, I'm afraid. The other thing about that is that I don't, you know, these negatives are priceless, really. And I don't want to be putting them. I scan them, as I allude to in the book. I scan them at ridiculous. I scan them here. I'm sat in my office at home now. and I scan them on my trusty old scanner over here, and I do them as high res, you know, the sweet spot, as I say in the text, and that's the only time they come out of the pack. Once they've been scanned, that's it. Once I've got a, you know, they're put away and they're held down there, you know, and then I keep the TIFF file. So it's 2.25, you know, 56 millimeters by 52 millimeters at 2,400 DPI, yada, yada, yada. I keep that as like my digital negative. And then I make a copy of that and then I work on it. So I resize it, I change it, I do whatever I need to do to it. But there's the original scan is a flat scan in the way that, and to me, that's really important because that's, I'm taking a digital photo of it, but I'm taking a very high res digital photo. There's only so high res you can go, by the way, as well. I could have them all drum scanned, but the problem with drum scanning is that they use that chemical, don't they, to stick it to the drum. And I don't want that. I know it fills in the cracks. I know this, and I've actually got I can do wet scanning here.
Right.
But I've never done that with an Alice photo or an Alice negative, because I just think the less I can do to handle them, touch them,
yeah,
the better.
Yeah.
So, because, you know, I mean, we're lucky really, because they've been kept in these little brown envelopes for 70 years.
It's amazing that they've survived. Yeah, there's no natural disasters, no burst pipes, no harsh frosts.
No,
it's incredible that they've been preserved. So great.
Yeah, and I have to say, quite honestly, that most of the negatives are in pristine condition,
yeah,
because they haven't been touched for 70 years.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, they came out of the Rolleiflex, they got developed, got cut into individual frames that may well have gone on to be used as, you know, prints for the client or whatever. And then she shoved them in these envelopes quite unceremoniously. I mean, these envelopes, quite interesting on the front of them. So the one I've just picked up now, it says name, Hammer Wedding, a word I can't read, Bonsall Christening, Radcliffe and Woodward and Willow Craft. And then on some of them, you'll get like a 7 and a 52, or you'll get an 11 and 53, or you'll get a 6 and a 54. That's the date. That's the date. That's the filing system. Yeah, so I know that, you know, so yeah, we do know to a certain extent when they were taken. But the thing is that when you look at an envelope like this, I mean, the one I've got in my hand now, I've probably got, well, I don't know, let's have a look, probably 20, 25 negatives in it, all cut into individual. I've only pulled that one out, which I told you was a cat in front of a window. We've got hundreds of pet photos, hundreds of them. So she was keen on it. She also had the same dog and the same dog name. So who knows why? But I can only surmise that the reason why I've got, you know, this, and they're all the same. All the packets are the same. They all have three or four names on them. And the thing is that you've got five or six jobs in there, but there's only 24 photos. So they have to be the end of the roll bits. They have to be the ones that they rejected or did or wasn't used, or some of them might be safety negatives in the way that, for want of a better term, like a safe copy, like a backup copy, if you like. So I'll take that or just take it again. Well, of course, today you just set your digital SLR and you take 8 frames a second, you get, you know, 15,000 shots at the same image, you know. So that's how she would have done it. She would have had to have done it because it was paid. And of course, she didn't have the luxury of seeing what she got, you know. And The picture I told you about where it's taken in Alice's studio, the studio was located out back of the shop. In fact, if you know where to look in Ebden Bridge, you can still see the concrete pad where it was.
Wow.
So the building's long gone. I think it fell over before it got, you know, one of them.
Yeah.
You know, but within there, she processed it. We've got pictures showing, you know, she processed the film herself. She had a dark room in there, so she did her own prints and that kind of thing. And we have them, which is great because, one, because it's Alice made this print, or it might be her assistant that made this print. But the other thing is, particularly with the colour ones, We've got some. We've got one colour packet. I'm thinking of it's in. Do you remember the Kodak gold packets you used to get?
Yes.
Where you colour print it. Well, it's one of them.
Oh wow.
Now Alice won. This is from like 1974, 1973, something like. So it's in colour. So she would have had to send that off to the local processor, whoever that might have been, because colour chemicals, and now it's even more extortionate, but then the stuff would have been, black and white had been dead cheap by comparison to colour, and a lot easier to do as well, a lot easier to do with the temperature and what have you. So the good thing about this particular packet is there's it's a picture of a couple in front of some flower beds. I mean, the greens as green as can be, and the reds, goodness me. You know, you have to put your sunglasses on to look at it. But the thing is that it's an accurate representation of the film of the time and the print of the time, which allows me to think I'm on the right track here. So the one with the hairdresser one, which is quite a yellow tint to it. Yeah, well, that's how it is. Because back then, Kodak film was notoriously yellow, you know. So you know, of course, for people that are shooting black and white these days, it don't matter, you know. And the other thing about the book is as well that the tone of the black and white pictures, they're all slightly warm toned, and the reason for that is I've tried to match how she put her prints out. And how she, because we've got several of them, you know, and I mean several as in thousands of them. I've tried to be as accurate as possible, Ian. I can't think of a better way of putting it, because ultimately I want to try and keep it, you know, keep it real, as I say. You know, for those who might buy the book, one of my favorite images in the book is on page 19. So if you would care to look at page 19.
I was going to ask how, because it's this one's funny.
Go on, man. Go on,
like,
man.
In the picture, Alice is with her friends, and they're looking at postcards. And yes. One of the people, they're looking like they're in someone's front room. And
yeah, he's got a lampshade on.
Yeah, the vicar.
Local vicar.
Vicar appears to have a lampshade on his head.
Yeah. No idea. That's in Alice's house, by the way.
Is it?
That's in
Alice's. Wow.
Yes, it is. It's in, and now... If you, I would like to draw your attention to look over Alice's head and the picture on the wall. Okay. I bet you've not noticed. I only noticed when I was zoomed in at 200%. I thought, bloody hell, it's Mona Lisa.
Yes, it's a postcard of the Mona Lisa behind her, isn't it? Yeah. Like a 4x6.
Yeah. I mean, in back end of Ebden Bridge, dark up, grim up north, she got Mona Lisa on. She got Mona Lisa on bloody wall and. Thing with lampshade on his head. I mean,
yeah, no, I like it, and it's obviously on a tripod or something. It's set up because everyone's
self timer.
Yeah, everyone's sort of sitting very posed in a kind of it's naturalistic, but it's also obviously posed. And like I say, with the lampshade on his head, I was just looking at it. I was like,
oh, it's just
that's
no idea.
No,
I'm not that Vic. I'm guessing that was the local working vicar at the time.
Yeah,
and I guess he would have known Alice well because. You know, obviously, she'd have seen me every weekend at the church, as it were.
Yeah.
You know,
amazing.
So yeah, it's a lot of people, a lot of people have sort of speculated, oh, what's going on in that? Well, I don't know.
Yeah,
of course, there's nobody to ask, but you know, it's an incredible thing. And sorry if I rambled on too much.
No, this has been a fantastic. I've loved having the book and talking it through with you and looking at some of the images. And I'm really pleased that the things that stood out were things that you have wanted to talk about and obviously put in there, you know, chose them, like the stuff about our flash photography and some of the photos, some of the street stuff. And, you know, that we've picked up, we've touched on a lot of those things. For people listening who should go and buy the book, where can they go and find out more about it and you know, wait for Start the Roll?
Let's start the roll, literally. So the Start of the Roll, the exhibition will be the July the 19th and 20th of 2025. That's Saturday, Sunday, for those who need to know, at the Birchcliff Centre in Hebden Bridge. It's still very much in its infancy in the way that, you know, we just, I mean, oh, it's 6 months away, but I will be starting to choose the images for it in this next few weeks and starting to get them ready. I do all the printing here, by the way. All the printing for the exhibition I do on my Epson here, and it's all 12 by 12 prints. So I have absolute control on it, you know. So I know it's right. You know, just where I am. But so that will happen. And as I alluded to earlier, there's going to be, and there won't be so many slots. And I'm not trying to sell it in that respect. But to set up a film camera, to you know, obviously Alice's chair, you'll be able to sit in Alice's original chair, and you'll have your picture taken with Alice's camera. There will be another camera there, my own Yashica Mat TLR, which I'll also take a frame on for insurance purposes. And there will be, I'm going to take a digital image as well, just one digital image, so it's fail-safe. So either way, you're going to get your picture taken in a chair. You're going to see it, even if the, in other words, if the camera breaks down or whatever, you know, because it's, you know, it's an old lady, so it's going to be, you just never know. And then obviously I'll be processing the film in Rodinal. It'll be taken on HP file. I'll be processing the film in Rodinal, and then The film will be scanned, because we're going to set up a new archive collection called Start of the Roll. And, you know, if it's okay with the subject or the family, that then this picture will get put into that collection. And part of it, there'll be a small fee for doing it, and I'm still working on that, but you will get an 8x8 A4 print off it as well. So it's almost full circle. Yeah. So I will take the picture on Alice's camera, I'll process the film, I'll scan the film here at home, and then I will print, and I use photo speed pearl paper, 290 gram pearl paper, which is, again, it just seems to work in the Epson really well. And you'll be able to have your own print, Alice print, and it's as near as you can get to Alice Longstaff taking a photograph, because it's her camera.
Yeah.
So all the defects in that camera will be there, you know, all the whatever it might be.
Yeah.
So that's that side of it. The actual exhibition, sorry, the images that, so we've got 120 images now that we've sort of released. Within the Birchcliffe Centre reception, we have like a foyer, because it was an old chapel. It was like a foyer in the mosaic floor. We usually have 40, 50 pictures hung up in there on a rotation. So we take, you know, take 10 out, put another 10 in, and that kind of thing. So there's always Alice, the end of the roll collection. There's always then to look at. If you come to Hebden Bridge, you come to the Birchcliffe Centre, you can also come and have a look at them.
Amazing.
To buy a book, you just need to ask. Can I send you the email address?
In fact,
it's Andrew's email address that we've been corresponding with.
Brilliant.
It's that email. If you email Andrew, he will sort you out. The just so that people know, the first edition, the first 250 copies of the book have gone. We've ordered another 250 copies. There's only 70 or so of them left now. Right. But once we sell a few more copies, then we'll order a third run. You know, yeah. it's limited edition, but in reality, it'll just, and yeah. every time we release the, you know, so the second edition. So I've got a first one here. Yours is the first one, by the way.
Oh,
okay. Some of the details in that now have been updated. So, there's one where we'd name the chapel wrong, for example. Just silly little things, but, yeah. You know, we're working blind most of the time. So we're kind of reliant on our own knowledge and people coming in and saying, oh, do you know that's such and such a street? Oh, I remember that guy. It was such and such. Somebody from the History Society, Hebden Bridge History Society, said to me the other day, when you get a minute, somebody's bought a book and they've been looking at all the cars in the book, and they can tell you the make and model of all the cars that appear in the book. I'm like, really? Really?
That's
so
cool.
So again, that so maybe in the third or fourth edition, it might be, you know, this is an Austin 12 part circa 19. See what I mean? Every time I get more information, so every time I reprint the book, I add bits of information, but that's the nature of the beast.
Yeah.
You know.
This is brilliant. It's like archaeology, you know, you're just uncovering a little bit more every time.
It's updating.
Yeah.
As regard to, I mentioned in the video that we digitized, I think I say 1,000 images and 120 of them are usable. Well, that's now not correct, because that video was made before lockdown. So we've digitized around about 4,000 now.
Wow.
and of that exhibition quality or book quality, if you like, at least 300, at least 300. And I say, I've got a box here and there's a couple hundred negatives in there. I don't know. There might be 50 in there. There might be two in there. I don't know. So, and that's the beauty.
It's going to keep you
busy. Well, yeah. It's a labour of love. I mean, it's funny because, you know, I'm in my mid-50s now, and I always thought when I got to my mid-50s, I might be an electrician 4 days a week and a photographer or photographing or photographer, something to do 1 day a week. Well, it turns out I'm doing Sparky and electricianing 5.5 days a week, and I'm doing Alice Longstaff 3 nights a week. I sit up here in my office. I've got my record player and my, you know, and all that kind of thing. So I sit up here and just, you know, not every night. But when I'm going up to an exhibition, and this might help other people that are doing this kind of thing, that my advice would be, if you put an exhibition together and it's going to be 40 images, for example, just do four, do them four, finish them, print them, pack them up, and then move on to the next four. Don't keep going round in circles. Because one, the quality will drop, and two, you'll get frustrated and you'll forget what you've done. So and that's how I do it. So when I did the book, it was, you know, that, to be fair, all the images in the book I'd already done. So just do four or five at a time. Don't, you know, that's my advice anyway. Yeah. So awesome. There you go.
Brilliant. Well, thank you so much. No, it's an absolute pleasure. It's wonderful to hear about the project and to hear what you're doing. And you know, please don't stop. And then we can...
No, I'm not. I'll come down.
I'd love to come down and see the exhibition in July. And then we'll have you back.
Well, you give us a shout. Can I just mention that I've just set up an Alice Longstaff Photography Facebook group just this last day or two. Yeah. So if you look on Facebook, it's there, and you'll, yeah, some of the, yeah, I mean, have a look yourself, but it's only got 3 or 4 images on it at the minute, but it's gonna, so I'm doing that to complement the book. That's what we're doing, or the books, should I say, one book at the minute. There will be a second edition with 60 eventually, maybe 2026 or 2027 or maybe 2028. I don't know.
Depends how many you're in that packet. Who knows? You might find,
who knows?
You know, 20 bangers.
I shall have to put my white gloves on and have a look.
Yeah. Amazing.
All right, mate. Well, thank you very, very much.
Absolute pleasure.
You take care, and I'm sure we'll speak again. And come and see us. Let me know when you're coming down. I'll make sure I'm there, and I'll show you around the archives and things like that.
That would be amazing. Yeah. Yes, yeah. I would love to do that.
Show you the glass plates that we have, and obviously Alice's camera.
Yes. Oh, brilliant. So, all right, mate.
Yeah. All right, mate. Yeah. Speak to you soon.
Thanks a lot. Take it easy. See you soon.
Cheers, mate. And you, mate. Cheers. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks, Alex, for a fantastic conversation there about a fantastic collection of photography. In the show notes, I'm putting the email address that you can get in touch with them to order a copy of the book. I highly recommend you do. It's really, really good. They were very kind and sent me a copy. But if you're in the area as well, don't forget, in July, there's going to be the exhibition. If you want to share a bit of Prime Lenses love, well, you can do that by rating and reviewing us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Give us a 5-star review, tell a friend, send a link to someone. You can also sign up to the weekly newsletter that goes out every Wednesday, and you can get that from ianfarrell.com/sign-up. I'm going to go online now and look at Rolleiflexes and convince myself that I don't need a new film camera. Because I'm a tourist. But it's getting hard to resist. I've shot some medium format before, it's pretty cool. Oh, okay, right, I'm gonna go and remove the eBay app from my phone. You have an amazing week, and we'll see you next time.